And if you look at the infection case, the infection fatality rate, not the case fatality rate, where you get a diagnosis, you take the symptomatics and the asymptomatics and put it together, the statistic that was published in May was less than influenza.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Tuesday, December 8th, 2020. Thank you for joining me today. It's going to be probably not, I'm going to try to make this shorter than usual, but I want to let you know right out of the gate that I have a very important dinner tonight that I'm going to try to make on time. So I'm going to make sure I try to keep this to a compact shorter than usual time, but you guys know how that usually ends up. But there's so much important to get into today. I also wanted to give a quick shout out in general to I rarely mention it, and I'm not even, of course, wearing one today, but we have our Question Everything t-shirts as well as our sweatshirts that just came out. New Question Everything t-shirts on the link that'll be in the show notes below on truthclothing.io. It's Christmas time, so it's a good time to do it if you want to support independent media. And many of you already support us via direct something or other, or Patreon or PayPal, but this also supports other independent media with Nathan and Lift the Veil and the different people that they work with. So if you want to support independent media, this is a good thing to do. On that note, let's jump right into the important stuff today. Now, it's unbelievable to see how this can be happening while the other things that are happening around the Pfizer vaccine discussion. It almost blew my mind today to think that this is happening simultaneously. We're going to talk about the vaccine, Pfizer, the trials, and the lies within that vaccine that are getting really intense, and the experts that continue to call it out and point it out, as well as some stuff about nanoparticles in regard to vaccines, which really, as I'll say again, only means essentially a nano-sized particle. So a nanotechnology or nanobot would be a nanoparticle, but so would a piece of spit or something else that can reach that size. That doesn't mean this isn't very alarming and very important, and we'll get into it in regard to before COVID-19 and why this is very alarming. And it's even more so as we go forward. We're going to debunk another mask study that somebody asked me to check out, which I just took me about 10 seconds to see the ploy that they were in using in this, and some old, really hard to see discussions of some lockdowns. Now, some of the stuff at the end, if I end up taking too long, as I tend to do, I'll just push over to the next show, but let's get right into it. In the interest of time, I'm going to start off with Derek's recent article that is a really important read, not very long. And this is one that I think is important for you guys for anybody out there to catalog and to keep and to have on file for somebody if they ask about the PCR test, because this goes over the things that we have been talking about as well as some of the new discussions. Florida, and this is what we recently discussed in the last show. Florida Department of Health quietly requires labs to report cycle threshold, the thing that we've been focusing on, of troubled PCR tests. Now, remember, this is where Fauci came in maybe mid-July, I think, and said that anything, 37 or higher, you have a minuscule chance of achieving something that you could use. And here we are, where almost every state across the country is using over 37, most of them 40, guaranteeing in that case that you're going to have a high prevalence of false positives. And you would anyway, by the way, with this test. But this is almost as if they wanted it to happen, because nothing changed and it continued forward. Now, it says on December 3rd, the Florida Department of Health announced a new update requiring all laboratories conducting COVID-19 tests to record new details for the PCR test. The announcement came via an email update on the Medical Quality Assurance Division of the Florida DOH Department of Health addressed to all licensed healthcare practitioners. Now, on August 3rd, and this is them basically saying we need to see these cycle thresholds because this is obviously relevant and it's becoming an issue. Now, on August 31st, Derek attended a press conference in Houston and had a chance to speak with Houston Health Authority Dr. David Percy. Now, I think this is one of the great things about Derek's work and actual investigative journalism is he's not just regurgitating things that he's read. He's actually speaking to people, actually doing research on real-world research and going out there and finding people to talk to about these things. This is the kind of stuff that you do not see from mainstream, other than, I don't want to get bogged down in that ridiculous conversation, but very important. And he says he talked to him about concerns around the test used to detect COVID-19. Now, Dr. Percy said when the labs report numbers of COVID-19 cases to the city of Houston, they only offer a binary option of yes for positive, no for negative, which you've heard on this show. which the point being is there's a lot of nuance lost in that. You know, point of fact, like whether you are even transmissible or whether you will ever actually become infected, because this can detect a very, very, very small amount of virus. Now it says, but in reality, as Dr. Percy speaking, it comes in what is called cycle thresholds. It's an inverse relationship. So the higher the number of virus, the higher the number, the less virus there was in the initial sample, Percy explained. Now it says some labs will report out to 40 cycle threshold. And if they get a positive at 40, which means there is a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of virus there. That's a direct quote that gets reported to us as positive and we don't know any different. Percy noted that the key question is at what value is someone considered still infectious? Obviously, that's relevant. Right off the bat, this always jumps into my head in these conversations. For those that are thinking, why not? Err on the side of caution because we're in danger. Fine. I've said this from the beginning. If you agree with that logic, you can't then also say, well, then use those numbers to restrict people's movements or lock them down or force them to wear a mask because they're not accurate. You're inflating them because you're afraid of something. And then we pretend like that number means that we need to be afraid. But wait a minute, you just said you're inflating the number. So how about we find out what the real number is and whether or not we should be afraid before we start inflating that number for safety? It says, quote, because if you test me and I have, and this is Percy talking again, a tiny amount of virus, does that mean I'm contagious? That I'm still infectious to somebody else? If you are shedding a little bit of virus, are you just starting? Or are you on the downside of it? Dr. Percy asked this in the lobby of Houston City Hall with Derek Brose. He believes the answer is for the scientific community to set a national standard for cycle threshold. Right, the thing that Dr. Fauci said was incredibly important 6 months ago, or however many months ago. I don't remember if it was July or what. I've played that video numerous times, but it's months and months ago. Plenty of time has passed where things could have been changed. Nobody even spoke about this until now. So yes, that's obviously something that should be happening here. That's, of course, pretending that this test should be used at all in this sense, which it shouldn't, which we know. As Carrie Mullis, the inventor of this test, said, yes, in regard to HIV, but talking about the idea of that this test should not be used to decide whether in the way that it's being used today, to decide whether or not you're transmissible, to decide whether or not you should be restricted. It's ridiculous. It says, on November 11th, the Lisbon Court of Appeals ruled that the PCR test, and this is something we also reported on, is unable to determine beyond a reasonable doubt that a positive result corresponds, in fact, to the infection of a person by SARS-CoV-2 virus. Of course, that's pretending for a minute that it's even been isolated that nobody wants to address. It says the panel of judges concluded in Lisbon that the number of cycles of such amplification results in a greater or lesser reliability of the test. And the problem is that this reliability shows itself in terms of scientific evidence as more than debatable, meaning that this is obvious. The higher you go, the more inaccurate it gets in regard to what they're using it for. It says the ruling went even further, stating, quote, in view of current scientific evidence, this test shows itself to be unable to determine beyond a reasonable doubt that such positivity corresponds, in fact, to the infection of a person by the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Nobody in the mainstream media even touched this. It's a really big deal. Now, here's the part that I found to be especially relevant as this new scientific elite control the direction that we go. It says, predictably, the judge's ruling was questioned and criticized by health officials and some in the science community. Now, right off the bat, it's kind of a faux pas. It's bad form to relitigate. For people to go back and be like, here's what they did. Let me make that clear. Judges, their job is to make rulings based on the facts in front of them. Sometimes we disagree with their ruling. That's how this works. You don't just because you disagree and think, well, no, it's stated fact that what I think is right and what you said was wrong. That doesn't mean you can then do something about that because the judge just did their job. Take it back to court. That's how the system is supposed to work. I'm not arguing that's good. I'm just saying that's how it is. So in this case, where we have judges who are being criticized by other health officials after making this ruling, It happens quite often, actually, but it's considered kind of especially for other, I guess, judges and lawyers to go back and point out things they did wrong. But more than that is the next part. It says one report notes that the judges might face disciplinary action. So now we're at a point where judges are doing their job and ruling on cases, maybe unfavorably, but then instead of saying that's wrong and here's why and we'll show you in the next legal process, no, they're reprimanding them or potentially reprimanding a judge for doing what they are supposed to do and looking at the evidence and coming to their opinion on that evidence. And just because we now think that we disagree with that judge's opinion, we can actually reprimand them. You know how what that will do? It will cause judges in the future to not rule against the status quo. That's the point. So there's no, once that happens, and I argue it's already there, you would have no semblance of any honest ruling because the status quo, the establishment, the people in charge will dictate or at least influence their rulings. This is what you're looking at. It's incredible. So just realize how outside the rails that is, or this is off the rails that is. We're going to see this in the United States, I promise you, as this goes forward with mask cases, with lockdown cases, you're going to see judges get attacked, even lose their jobs because they rule in a way that challenges health mandates and health gospel of the scientific and medical elite that they're leading us by the nose today. It says a report in Publico says the judges from the Lisbon Court of Appeal misread two scientific articles they quoted in their ruling. And the scientific consensus on PCR testing is, quote, absolute. He says absolute. I mean, we literally just quoted another scientist, another expert, and we have a limitless example of experts who are claiming exactly what we keep talking about, that there are false positives. So how in the world can he argue that it's absolute? The scientific consensus, that what they're claiming, which is the mainstream push, is that there's no question here. There's no question for PCR testing, only maybe to entertain the possibility of false negatives, which is just dumb to think about how that only one of them makes sense to these people. But now they're just attacking them and claim. And look, even if they made mistakes, my point is that what they did was their job and mistakes happen. I mean, look at it this way. In regard to, let's just take a huge, like something like Roe versus Wade. Understand that there was a huge portion of people, including people in the government, who aggressively disagreed with the ruling. So at that point in time, if they had said, okay, well, as government, we're now going to reprimand you because we didn't like your ruling, because we think we disagree with how you cited the evidence or how you did whatever. That's what we're seeing here. It's crazy. It says Vasco Barreto, a researcher at the Center for the Study of Chronic Diseases of the Facility of Medical Services of the Universidad Nova de Lisboa, told Publico that the judge's ruling was false and that they had acted irresponsibly. Right. By making a decision you disagree with is irresponsible. Like, again, it's only because of the narrative that we're in a dangerous area where anything, the wrong information can send everybody off. That's just crazy. That boils down to you're too stupid to think for yourself, and we can't risk bad information sending you in a dangerous direction. So we're going to think for you and we're going to act for you. In the first weeks of September, a number of important revelations regarding the PCR test came to light in the UK. New research from the University of Oxford Center for Evidence-Based Medicine and the University of the West of England found that PCR test poses the potential for false positives when testing for COVID-19. So wait a minute, didn't he just say that the consensus was absolute? So is the University of Oxford, the Center for Evidence-Based Medicine, not part of that scientific consensus? Apparently not. These blithely state the scientific community whenever they want to bolster their points. It's the idea. It's never 100%. The idea that the entirety of every scientific person that matters in the world would all have the exact same opinion in any topic is ridiculous. I mean, you could break it down to things like gravity, and there'll be varying opinions on small factors of it. I'm sure people will challenge me on that. I'm just trying to make a point. The idea is that there are different things and different points that people have within any of these discussions. And you can argue that people that have that varying opinion would just be not the scientific community. But that is where you're wrong. No matter how far you go, if a person has the credentials, if a person has given the time, or I mean, it doesn't even matter what of the superficial things we put on these that you have to go to school and get your degree and on and on and on. The idea that we get to dictate, or rather the people in control get to dictate who is the community and who isn't, is another metric of control. It's quite frustrating. And I mean, we're all beginning to see this unravel as it's getting really ridiculous. It says in the first weeks of September, a number of important revelations regarding the PCR test came to light in the UK. Oh, I just reading that. And it says Professor Carl Hannigan, one of the authors of the study, Viral Cultures for COVID-19 Infectivity Assessment, a Systemic Review, said that there was a risk that an increase in testing in the UK will lead to an increase in the risk of sample contamination, and thus an increase in COVID-19 cases. So another and separate and equally alarming thing that no one talks about. The team reviewed evidence from 25 studies where virus specimens had positive PCR tests. The researchers state that the genetic photocopying technique, which is what the PCR concept is, technique scientists use to magnify the sample of genetic material that is collected, is so sensitive that it could be picking up fragments of dead virus from previous infections, meaning incorrectly telling you what's happening. But yeah, but it's absolute though, right? The researchers reach a similar conclusion as Dr. David Percy, namely that, quote, a binary yes-no approach to the interpretation of a PCR unvalidated against viral culture will result in false positives, with segregation of large numbers of people who are no longer infectious and hence not a threat to the public health. That's assuming it's even really happening, guys. The idea that that's something that we shouldn't be allowed to say when we're staring at so much dishonesty and deception is unbelievable to me. But all this is basic common knowledge that you can look up right now, except if you look at that and then go, but wait a minute, does that mean that you could be leading us by the nose into a direction that means, I mean, whatever you want, does this mean you're lying to us? No, of course not. You can say that, well, now you're fake news and you're no longer part of the scientific community and we're going to censor you. It's like that, of course, no wonder why there's no honest dialogue happening here today. Well, here's a post from thegov.uk behind the headlines, counting COVID-19 deaths. Now, this is an extension of the point in regard to how they get to that point. Using PCR tests. That's the point. COVID-19 deaths are decided by a test and then when they eventually die, which is ridiculous, knowing that there are false positives, especially knowing that it's even higher than we're being told. But it says, in this regard to defining a COVID-19 death, and this is something we pointed out right in the beginning of all of this, and it never changed. Even right now, actually, is the statement of it changing, but you'll see that it's insulting. But it says the World Health Organization, you know, the group that we're not allowed to challenge up until the point when they say lockdown shouldn't be used anymore. And then everybody else challenges them and then accepting. Don't ask why. Just only listen when it applies to you. It's frustrating how constantly the World Health Organization has switched the things that they were saying. And even the media attack them when they said lockdowns aren't actually what you should be doing, except when we're not allowed to challenge them. It's, you know, we can be censored for it and so on. But according to the group that we're only sometimes allowed to question, COVID-19 death is defined for surveillance purposes. I love that, for surveillance purposes, as a death resulting from a clinically compatible illness in a probable or confirmed COVID-19 case. So right off the bat, you're talking about a probable case, which means, the definition varies widely. The UK has changed it a few times, but understand, we all know what the word probable means. We're not sure. So in cases already where people are possibly not even actually sick or possibly didn't even die from it, they're including it if they're just not sure, but leaning towards possible. That's ridiculous. It says, unless there is a clear alternative cause of death that cannot be related to COVID-19. So the idea right now as it stands is that they are listing anything, anybody that dies who had once a COVID positive test is being listed as a COVID death. We already talked about this from the guy who had a motorcycle crash months after he got his test, and they deemed that a COVID death, and they didn't even hide it. They said, well, we don't know if that didn't add to it. That was what the doctor actually said, because this is the idea. They're saying, well, of course, because we're erring on the side of caution to keep you safe, but then swinging around and locking people in their homes based on that absurd stretch of logic. Now, it says the definition, therefore, requires a clinical assessment. And it says for each month or several months, the COVID-19 data dashboard has been reporting for England all deaths in people who have a positive test. Period. That is the end of the sentence. Let's not pretend like that's fake news, but as it will be called by people who don't know what they're talking about. Anybody who's got a positive test in England as of now, or at least as of before this statement and the application of this document, that anybody who had died after ever getting a positive test was listed as a COVID death. I wonder why these were continuing to grow as people getting tests where there's a high prevalence of false positives and you're testing a lot of elderly people, and then people just die because they're getting old or they have other issues. And as it continues to grow, as we're 9 months in, 10 months in, people, you know how many people normally die from average causes or natural causes every year? It's a good amount. So imagine you're testing all of these nursing homes and all of these people and getting it, even according to the CDC, let's just give them that. Let's call it a 30% false positive. So 30% of all those people are going to be positives, even though they're not. And that's people that are all on the end of their lives. So 10 months later, how many of them have died? Right? There's a bloating of this. That's just one small slice of this deception. But it goes on to say, this is a robust measure as it uses the fact of a positive test and the fact, I love the fact, of a positive test, you know, with a high prevalence of false positives, we'll call it a fact though, and the fact of death to derive the number of reported. However, it is only an approximation of the number of people who die from COVID-19 because other causes of death are included. And some people who die from COVID-19 never had a positive test. Oh, I see. So instead of going, oh, well, we're bloating this number based on a hypothetical assumption that they died later and it had to do with COVID-19. And instead of arguing that that looks like we're increasing the numbers, we're going to bend that and contort it into a way that makes it look like we're missing numbers. That's what that just said. Well, of course, because there's people out there that must be dying from this because we know how dangerous it is, and we aren't testing them, so we don't even know. That is lofty and hypothetical and reaching into the ether and just saying, well, this is possible. Well, you know what's very possible? The fact that we, as a matter of fact, know that you're bloating these numbers. Not that it could be that there are people possibly out there that haven't been tested that may have died from it. We just don't know, but we're going to act like that's certain and it has to be more. You're telling us that you're bloating the numbers. As a matter of fact. It's incredible, the mental gymnastics that are happening right in front of us. It says it was decided to adopt this measure in April in order to, right, remember, this is right before we saw the increase, right? To be sure not to underestimate the number of COVID-19-related deaths. Okay, so they're stating that they overshot it intentionally to make sure they didn't underestimate it. It says it was always intended to review this approach as the pandemic progressed, but yeah, they just didn't do that until now anyway. So months and months and months went by. As they were wildly overshooting it intentionally, for your safety, of course. They knew that. They hope you didn't know that. And they locked you in your home, destroyed your business, made you wear a mask, and social distanced you from all of your family based on the idea of a hypothetical number that is guaranteed to be bigger than it is. Scotland, for example, has only been counting deaths within 28 days of positive tests. Oh, so that's better then. Right, so if you go out and get hit by a car, 27 days after getting better, if you were even sick at all, well, that's going to be a COVID death. That's exactly what that says. Just for your safety, though. So that deaths from COVID-19 beyond 20 days are not included. Oh, okay. But it says, how does this identify deaths in people who have tested positive? It says, in England, we have collated the details of every person who has had a test, had a laboratory-confirmed positive COVID-19 result, which means, you know, there's a high, that's the PCR, that's high prevalence of false positives, at any point since the start of the pandemic. You hear what that said? It will be a very valuable resource for tracking the impact of COVID-19. It says we have collected all of the details of every person who has had a laboratory confirmed test. Right. So if you've ever been tested because of COVID-19 or more specifically been tested positive, which is, I would argue, most of them, then you're being, they have your information and that it's being collected and tracked. And we all know this. This whole process is being coordinated and tracked. It says, does this mean you have an overcounted deaths? So they're even posing the question that we're asking. Here's their answer. The total number of deaths reported in the daily numbers is less than the total number of deaths registered with COVID-19 on the death certificate. So the numbers reported have not generally been an overestimate. Let me read that again. The total number of deaths reported in the daily numbers, so just reported, not confirmed, just reported, is less than the total number of deaths registered with COVID-19 death certificates. That doesn't even make sense with the concept of having bloated numbers based on false positive tests and giving people death, COVID death related when they're just dying from a car accident. This is mental gymnastics. The total number of deaths reported in a daily number is less than the people with COVID-19 on their death certificate. It just bothers me how obviously it's like the people writing this must know that they're deceiving you. And I believe that they do. But they're in their mind, they're thinking, well, all those dangerous conspiracy theorists in some cases, that's what they're thinking in some cases. They're thinking, oh, the dangerous conspiracy theorists are out there and they're going to try to manipulate. So we're going to lie to them because we know it's good for them. So lying for their truth, you know, like everybody seems to be doing today. What is changing? It says two new deaths. Now this is, so that's what's been happening all the way up until now. Now here's what's changing. Two new death indicators will now be used by all four nations in the UK to provide a full picture of both recent trends and the longer term burden of the disease, which they're just, I guess, guessing at because we clearly haven't seen really long term effects yet, but they continue to act like we all know there's just long term effects. But it says the number of deaths in people with COVID-19 that occur within 28 days of the first positive laboratory confirmed test. So the PCR test. The number of people who die in people, the number of deaths in people with that test. So all they did was, in this case, bring it back to 28 days instead of forever, which is good. But still, you 27 days later, you'll still be the death regardless of what happens to you. That's what it says. Then it goes on to say death that occur more than 28 days after a positive test will not be included. Okay, that seems like Scotland, same thing. But here's what was confusing. In the same bullet points, then it says the number of deaths that occur within 60 days of the first positive test. Okay, so that seems to sort of contradict the other one, but these are different indicators. But then it goes on to say, after saying the number of deaths that occur within that, well, the number of deaths that occur within 60 days, so before it. Then it goes on to say deaths that occur after 60 days will also be added to this figure. What? If COVID-19 appears in the death certificate. So it just, this is just garbage. They're just muddying up the waters. And all this is a continuation of the idea that apparently 28 days or then 60 or even after, it just get added in as long as they write it on your death certificate. It says, using these new measures, the total number of deaths in people with laboratory confirmed infections is reduced by 5,377. So adding these two things in, simply bring it back from forever to 28 days or then simultaneously 60, which seems confusing. It says that even that reduces it by over 5,000 deaths. How does that not show you that what they've been doing up until now is wrong? That's what it does show you. But it says if only deaths within 28 days of the test are included, and then it says, and by another 1,668, if including only deaths within 60 days, meaning that that's inaccurate. If you bring it back to simply people who did die and you can prove it within the test, and well, of course, the test being aside, that it was there, you can see that they died, they were sick, and then they passed away from COVID-19, not from pneumonia 4 months later or from a car crash a month later. This is the point. If you did that, these numbers would go down exponentially. All you're doing is limiting it to a month afterward, and you're going down by 6,000? I mean, for crying out loud, guys, this is crazy obvious, and nobody wants to talk about it. Now, here's one more point on the PCR test that's something that Jay Standards pointed out. Good point. I've been thinking about this as well. He said, when they start to cycle PCRs lower, which arguably they're starting to do because this conversation is being forced into mainstream or being allowed into mainstream, when they start to cycle PCR threshold lower, once the vaccine comes out, to make it appear as if the vaccine is working, cycle threshold data from Florida will be extremely important. So when they're referencing this article from Derek. And the point is that this data Florida's collecting will be especially relevant if we can monitor as they slowly start to bring down the cycle threshold and they start to say, look, the vaccine's working, when really all they're doing is making the test more accurate and that's reflecting in the lower numbers. That's a very good point. Or how about this? How about the idea that they won't even intentionally do it? The discussion's being circulated now, maybe timed intentional to say, well, we need to lower the threshold because clearly we've been doing it wrong this whole time. And it's seemingly perfectly aligned along with the release of the vaccine. So now when these places start to do it on their own, you're going to see a correlation with a decrease in the numbers that they're going to account to. They're going to say it's because of the vaccine. So we need to keep track of what they're doing now with the threshold and what they're going to be doing in a month from now or what they did throughout this process. Because Jay made an excellent point right there. Because yeah, that will very much create the illusion that something's happening when all that's happening is they're correcting their faulty test. It's quite interesting. Now, on that note of the PCR test creating numbers that build an entire pandemic that wasn't, FDA scientists endorsed the, quote, highly effective Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine ahead of the key panel, which, as far as I know, it could have already been approved right now, which I think it's very obvious that that is what's going to happen. Now, take note of the date here, December 8th. Okay? Same day, December 8th. And FDA says Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is safe and effective. Right? This is in addition to all the things we already talked about. And the fact that Pfizer is basing this off a very, very, very small, I think it was 164 total of people that got, and under 8 got sick. I mean, it's a joke. That does not extrapolate out to 300 million people. And the point that they argue why they didn't do it is because we're in a rush because you're all in danger. So doing it less safe because you're in danger. Doing things dangerous for your safety. It doesn't make any sense. As I know I keep saying, I just find that to be stupidly ridiculous. But December 8th, same day. Next one, same day. FDA confirms Pfizer vaccine 95% effective, but warns of severe adverse reactions after dose 2. So now we got the first warning of severe adverse reactions, which, by the way, one of those is death, as was listed on the CDC, as well as always a severe adverse reaction is considered, one of those is considered death. So they said that about dose 1, and now they're saying about dose 2 as well. Of course, that we all saw that because that's the same thing. But as they say here, as they're pointing out themselves, the vaccine has been shown to elicit increased local and systemic adverse reactions as compared to those in the placebo arm, lasting a few days usually. Check this out. The most common, and this is from Pfizer, the most common solicited adverse reactions were injection site reactions. 84% of people had, you know, like a, either like a rash or a puffy or an itchy reaction to where it was shot. 62% of people, remember this is lasting for a few days, 62% of people, 63 actually, had fatigue. Sometimes that can be to the point where you can barely stand up. 55% of people who got this had a headache. So you remember, usually lasting a few days, a headache, muscle pain, almost 40%. 31% chills, joint pain, 23%, fever, 14%. So ask yourself this, what's the likelihood that you're going to have fatigue, headaches, muscle pain, chills, joint pain, and a fever after getting this? Think about that. 84% with that, 62 fatigue, 55. Half the people getting this could potentially have a headache for a few days, as well as the other ones. That's crazy. But of course, it's because you're in danger. So we're going to do this very dangerous thing to keep you safe. But December 8th, it continues. Okay, wait a minute. So on the same day that they're saying, it's totally safe, it's totally effective, we can all tell you that the FDA says to participants in that exact trial for that thing they're saying is effective and safe, two people died. Two participants in the Pfizer COVID vaccine trial have died. And they're happy to say on the same day that they're endorsing it because it's highly effective. They're endorsing it because it is safe. What? If two people out of 164 died, please do the math, ladies and gentlemen. Do the percentage on how many people that means in regard to 300 million, hypothetically speaking, because it doesn't translate exactly. It's a lot of people. Now it says the agency has admitted today that two participants in the phase 3 trials have died. One of them was immunocompromised, which, by the way, why are they in the trial then? Like, really? Like, so possibly they didn't know that. Possibly they didn't know they had it. Or so I would argue that probably means that they got that from the vaccine. They figured it out later, which is probably, I mean, that's just a hypothetical, you know, I'm guessing. But immunocompromised means they shouldn't have been in the trial because you know this is what will happen, that they'll have a reaction to it. Immunocompromised people shouldn't even be getting vaccines. That's what the CDC says. So the fact that they were there is very weird. Or that's what they're saying anyway. It says one of them was immunocompromised, according to the Jerusalem Post, because we can trust them, citing data released earlier. So the other one, I guess they're just keeping close to their chest. I wonder why. The FDA is expected to release two separate assessments of the trial data before a panel of experts meets to review the data and either approve Pfizer's request for emergency approval or deny it. This is the point. So right now, they're either sitting in front of this, or they've already decided, and two people died, and they admitted to it. And if they allow this to go forward, that will be unprecedented. Or actually, probably not, to be honest. But it should make you very uncomfortable. And it should make you absolutely say no until you are blue in the face to allowing this to be given to you or your family or anybody you love. Because this is dangerous. And no, that is an absolute fact based on what they're telling you. And then V-Day arrives in the UK. Understand, the same vaccine, where two people died in the phase three of the trials, and you have very severe effects with 80% of people, 50% of people having some things that last potentially 3 days that are pretty bad, and it's already being pumped into arms in the UK right now. The second patient, a patient, is 81 years old. The first one was a 90-year-old grandmother. And guess what had the least, I don't think there was any elderly I think it was children and elderly that were actually being tested in regard to this test. They said this. Yet the first ones they roll it out to are two elderly people? How does that make sense? And of course, the guy's name is William Shakespeare. Let's pretend like that wasn't entirely planned because they wanted to have some quirky, cute story to cover the alarming part of what is really happening right now. It says FDA releases the data claiming Pfizer vaccine merits approval along with two people dying. And then Pfizer, Moderna warn about the inability to deliver more doses. Hurry, get it now. Hurry before they run out. That's what that's about. They're trying to create artificial demand of something that they know people do not want. Now, on top of all of that, this thing that they're rolling out, knowing people won't want, on the other side of it, a little bit of insurance for themselves, they are continuing to push the COVID passport, which means that you, or whatever, immunity passport. Meaning that you won't be able to live your life unless you get this thing that you don't want. But that's not mandatory, though. They'll listen to their supporters. We're not making you do it. Oh, you won't live your life without it. COVID passport will be essential when international travel reopens. Cebu Pacific boss. Now it says COVID-19 passports to show people's inoculation and infection history will be essential when the Philippines opens up international travel. The head of the country's largest budget carrier said Monday. You realize how many the largest budget carrier? These are huge corporations that are already telling you what's happening. Just because you want to listen to a couple of morons on Twitter who tell you they know because they're so smart and they've got a blue check next to their name as they're telling you what's happening, that's on you. A single global COVID passport will assure territories that travelers will not bring in the respiratory disease. This is speaking to the CEO of Cebu Pacific. It says, JG Summit Holdings, Inc., apparently. It says, quote, we do think that's essential. Especially, and it's talking about COVID passports, especially as we open up international travel. So it's not just their local thing, it's international. Ang dami damning their different vaccines. Making sure I wasn't, that's his name. I think that might be a translation here, but it says different vaccines, and I think we have to work on a single global COVID passport so that each country respects the passport. That is the point. A single global COVID passport. But it's fake news, though, right? And I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist, as some of the biggest... I mean, we already talked... I mean, it mentions that in one of these next parts, actually, that Derek already wrote about. I'll wait till I get to it. But it says that has to be the number one priority, to get vaccines in the hands in as much of the global population as possible, and then connecting this to a COVID passport, which is the real point, guys. Korean Air. Real possibility that airlines will mandate passengers to be vaccinated before travel. Here's another one. This is another Ticketmaster we already talked about, and it's waffling, I understand it, but here's the point I wanted to talk about. It says three global alliances, and remember, this is from November 13th, okay? So the point is, this is exactly what Derek wrote about like 2 months ago. Three global alliances representing 58 airlines are pushing governments to allow widespread COVID-19 testing of passengers instead of exiting quarantine restrictions that they argue are ineffective and have killed travel demand. It says One World Star Alliance and SkyTeam cited recent tests on the Common Pass, Digital Health Passport System, a nonprofit initiative backed by the World Economic Forum and Swiss-based foundation, the Commons Project, right? So the very people driving the Great Reset are pushing the Common Pass, which is being picked up by if you can't travel with some of these are massive entities that are connected to basically all, this is 58 airlines saying that you won't be able to fly without having some proof of these things to be able to board. That is societal exclusion. It says United Airlines is among the carriers that piloted the technology. We already talked about this. This is not a secret. All of this is being built, and this is simply another one. And like I said, the country's largest budget carrier is saying that this is what they're going to do. It should be alarming to you that we are seeing this built around something that is dangerous and is not even having the effect that they're saying it does. Jeffrey Jackson points out that Ben Osborne, Pfizer's UK managing director, refused to explain why the company needed indemnity. Which is, you know, sort of, it's immunity from liability, but it's also sort of like insurance, which is more the point, I think, here. It says, we're not actually disclosing any of the details around any of the aspects of the agreement and specifically around liability clauses. Why would that be? Here's the Independent. Coronavirus vaccine, Pfizer given protection from legal action by the UK government. Pfizer's UK boss refuses to explain. This should be so incredibly alarming. The Department of Health and Social Care has confirmed the company had been given an indemnity protecting it from legal action as a result of any problems with the vaccine. But it also says that ministers have also changed the law in recent weeks to give new protections to companies such as Pfizer, giving them immunity from being sued by patients in the event of any complications. Now understand, it's civil and legal or criminal. This is unbelievable. And as I kept telling you, it even says NHS staff providing the vaccine, as well as the manufacturer of the drug, groups like Emergent BioSolutions, you know, totally suspect groups that are behind verifiable crimes and lack of safety testing of past vaccines that they forced on people that hurt them, that they proved in a lawsuit with the Pentagon. Yeah, those kind of people. But it says are also protected. So as the joke I made, and it's a horrible joke, but it makes sense. If a nurse is going to give you the vaccine, trips and pokes you in the eye with the syringe, they're not allowed to be sued. They are. This is unbelievable. Now, yes, that's a ridiculous example, but I'm trying to point out that this can never be allowed. There's going to be so many people who are hurt within this that don't even have to do with the real agenda. People that just do things incorrectly, like that, which always happens. The third leading cause of death in the U.S., at least, is medical treatment. So you're telling me that you're giving these people an indemnity from actions that would happen irrespective of this. But in addition to that, the vaccine that might cause damage, the action of all types of things. But no, taken off the table. It says the vaccine will be made available to anyone over the age of 16, but will not be available to pregnant women because of the lack of data of how it could affect them at the baby. An ongoing trial is looking at this. Oh, but they don't do that at all with other vaccines, though. So why does that make sense? Take a moment to look that up. Right now, they do not test most of these vaccines in regard to pregnant women, in regard to any number of things, including how they work, how they hurt you with each other. So if you take all these vaccines, or at least take one and another one at the same time, they don't have tests that look into whether or not those two things react weirdly with each other. This is horrifying. So in this case, they're saying, no, we're not going to do this because it puts pregnant women in danger. So what about every other one? Don't think about that. Right? Think about how alarming that is. The Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine was authorized by the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency on Tuesday under Regulation 174 of the Human Medicine Regulations 2012, which allows an unlicensed medication to be used in an emergency such as a pandemic, and that's what it all comes back to. They are completely scot-free here because they're going to argue we did it because you're in danger, even though we're not. And the studies and the information and the stats all show us that. But they keep arguing that's why they're doing things that put you more at risk because we're in such a dangerous emergency pandemic. They won't let go of that because that's what gives them all the power. It also has the effect of granting civil immunity to Pfizer. That must be unprecedented. I didn't have a chance to look into that. I can't believe I've certain criminal. In the sense where you can't, sue them for, your son dies because you get a vaccine, you're not allowed to do anything about it. All you have to do, you have to go to the vaccine court. Well, they're saying they're giving Pfizer civil immunity. So you can't even sue them for personal damages. After the government changed the regulations, following a short three-week consultation in September, they just did this. So they're rewriting laws to make sure that these vaccine companies have no liability whatsoever. In a press conference with journalists on Wednesday, Ben Osborne, Pfizer's UK managing director, refused to explain why the company needed an indemnity. It's funny, I've seen people use that in both ways. I actually looked it up beforehand. Both, mainstream or whatever you want to call it, saying it company needed indemnity, and the company needed an indemnity. Interesting how, it's funny how things differ amongst different papers. But it says, he said, quote, "We're not actually disclosing any of the details around any of the aspects of that agreement, and specifically around the liability clauses. Do you not think that you as an American or living in the UK, that you have the right? Do you not think you have the right to know that information, especially when they're pressuring you to do this? And especially when they're using your safety to justify the lack of liability? Yes, is the answer. Obviously, you have that right. They're removing all of them from you as we speak. That's just one of them. Asked about when the full data on the vaccine's clinical trial will be published, the company said this was still being worked on. Cool. So we'll circle back after it's been forced in your arm and then decide for you. It says, she said the National Institute for Biological Standards would be independently testing every single vaccine that goes out to ensure it met safety standards. Do you know how this is the same thing as them saying this vaccine will stop you from getting sick? And when they say that, what they're meaning is the severity of your illness, not stop you from actually catching the thing, won't stop transmission, which we'll talk about next. But they say that so you'd misunderstand and you think he just said it won't make me sick. So there you go. Same thing. Do you really believe, let me put it this way, do you think it's even possible that they could inspect every single vaccine before it goes out independently? That's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. The reason she's saying that is because she wants you to think that, but what they're saying is they're going to independently test that vaccine, right? So it doesn't matter if it gets split up between 300 million different doses, it's one, they're checking it once, that vaccine. That's what they're saying. And even that, I do not believe for a second that they're going to independently step in and go, wait a minute, this doesn't look safe. Yeah, right. If that ever was happening, it would have happened 100 times over by now. And I'm not saying that as an opinion. The facts are that we've seen numerous examples of vaccines that hurt a lot of people. And it was always under the claim of rushing it out or for your safety or whatever because of a dangerous thing that's happening. And it always ends up hurting people. It's crazy. It really is. And it's happening right in front of us. And we need to do something about it. Here is Dr. Fauci himself telling you that the transmission is not, I mean, of course, they make it sound like we don't know, like it could, which is the same thing. It does not stop transmission. And if it did, they would tell you that.
The answer is that we know that the vaccine is 95% effective in preventing you from getting sick. We don't know yet.
But they don't know that. But you see the point, forgetting you from getting sick. What he's saying there, as the study pointed out very clearly, about reducing your symptoms. So when he says getting sick, he means getting symptoms. Nobody uses it like that. The only time you would use it like that is to trick people into thinking you wouldn't actually get sick. Americans, average Americans, when you say it stops you from getting sick, that means it stops it from happening. They're intentionally deceiving you guys. All of us. They're trying to intentionally deceive all of us.
It could be, I hope it is, but the answer is that we know that the vaccine is 95% effective in preventing you from getting sick.
But in addition to that, we don't know that also, because Pfizer has barely only just now released all their information. Up until now, that 94.5%, that was based on their assessment that they weren't showing any. Oh, this information is only just now being reviewed, and that's why they're reviewing it at that panel. We don't know that, but sure, listen to the guy who's lied to you so more times in this whole process than I can count.
We don't know yet. It could be, I hope it is, but we don't know if it's protecting you against infection, which is the reason why that even though we get vaccinated, you still want to until the level of virus in community is so low, you want to do some things like wearing a mask.
Meaning that you have to do it continually after the fact. Even if you get a vaccine, like they keep telling you, you get to go back to normal. It's not going to happen. That's not even on the table with this. It won't stop transmission, meaning you can spread it. People can catch it. And it also means that you have to continue social distancing and wearing your mask and locking down. That's what he just said. And that's what's going to continue to happen. Now, here's a video that I just wanted to include for you guys to watch for yourselves. That this is just RT reporting on the fact that Pfizer itself, their CEO, says they don't know if the vaccine will stop transmission. Now, I've reported that more than once, and I've shown you documentation. I just figured to use another example of a video you can watch, which has the source material you can check out, instead of just showing you the same thing I'm showing you that I've shown in the past. And on that note, let me do that exact thing right now, because it's important to show this article one more time. COVID-19 vaccine protocols reveal that trials are designed to succeed. Just to reiterate this part, I've shown this 100 times, and the point of this, remember, this was written, where's the date again? September 23rd, right? So this is before they had even finished the safety trial, before when they were beginning these trials. And the point is, they were designed to succeed, meaning they weren't safety trials. They stated in this then that they weren't trying to reach just reduce transmission. So let me ask you this. If in this discussion, I'll read it right here, prevention of infection is not a criterion for success of any of these vaccines. This is in September. So let me ask you this. If in September they had reported in their own documentation, Pfizer and Moderna, all of them, that they weren't even trying to stop transmission, that what they were trying to do was lessen symptoms so they could pass the safety test, why then did all of the people, all of the mainstream media, all the Faucis and the Redfields and the UK versions of them, all of these people out there were continually letting you believe that this would bring you back to normal, that you could get the vaccine and go back to normal. All the articles wrote it like that. They all wrote it like that. But they all knew that wasn't true. Explain that to me. How did that happen if they weren't lying to you about what they wanted you to think this would do? Whether it was because they were lying for their truth because they knew it was right, the right thing for you, or they just didn't know and they were regurgitating what the government told them. They knew from the very beginning of all of this that this would not stop transmission because they weren't even trying to reach that goal. It says, in fact, their endpoints all require confirmed infections and all those that they will include in the analysis for success, the only difference being the severity of the symptoms between the vaccinated and unvaccinated. That's it. Measuring differences amongst only those infected by SARS-CoV-2 underscores the implicit conclusion that the vaccines are not expected to prevent infection, only modify symptoms of those infected. Guys, this is September. I reported on this right then. And here we are. And everyone's going, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's like a headline story. On the mainstream, it's a headline story. How dumb is that? Right? I can't. They're saying it won't stop infection. Oh my gosh, look at this big story. Welcome to the team, mainstream. I mean, how pathetic is that? I mean, it's because they didn't care to look at it, or they knew they weren't supposed to talk about it. Again, just, I mean, I try not to pat myself on the back, but remember that we were talking about this months ago and told you that. So, you know, broke that news way back then. And I made that conclusion based on all the information, not because someone told me that. It would not stop transmission. That's the point. It says we all expect an effective vaccine to prevent serious illness if infected. Three of the vaccine protocols, Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, which I believe just got like a 63% effectiveness, so they're not looking hot in this regard, but it says do not require that their vaccine prevent serious disease, only that they prevent moderate symptoms, which may be as mild as a cough or a headache. That is it. So they lied to you from the start, and they wanted you to believe this would be something you needed. And because of independent media, this slipped through the cracks and people began to point to it. And now we know the truth. And so now they're trying to play the game with your, they're trying to play mental gymnastics, and they're equivocating with all of it. No, well, here's why. And what they're going to do, I promise you, like I said before, is they're going to come around and say, no, this is the first step. You got to take this one because we're building towards something, or the next one will be even better. And we're already working on, this is what we need to do this now so we can help fight the disease. And we're going to swing back around for the next one. And then no one will want to stand up and say, but wait a minute, why did you tell us we would with the first one? Why, you'd known for 6 months and no one told us? Why are you telling us now? No one will do that, except people like us. And the experts out there who have the courage to actually stand up and speak the truth, like Dr. Sucharit Bhakdi, I believe. I heard his name earlier, and I'm terrible at these names. But very important clips. Thank you, Spiro, for sharing this. He did indeed a wow clip from a renowned scientist, doctor, and author on COVID. Of course, because he's an author and writes a book, he's only doing this to sell copies. How do you think people who fight against the narrative fund themselves? It's not profitable to stand up and fight against the things that everybody believe in. It's just so frustrating how that, I mean, look, you consider that. Consider there's a profit motive to some degree. But more importantly, consider the information first and then add that in, because the information's all that really matters. It doesn't matter who said it. Right? It doesn't really matter. As long as you confirm it for yourself, you cross-reference it with other sources, and you think for yourself. It doesn't matter who said it. It's information. Take a listen to this. This is a important clip.
Award-winning researcher, retired microbiologist, Dr. Sucharit Bhakdi. Which, in your view, has been the most injurious to the public and not suited to the science?
The looming vaccination.
The vaccination, on the issue of the vaccination, we'll get to that in a moment. But on the social distancing and the masks, just focusing on that for a moment, which of those two in your research and your work has been the most displaced?
Both.
Both have. Not at all point. Backed up by the science.
Zero science.
I love this guy. Like, just, you know, and I ask everybody out there to actually do their due diligence and look into the individual and realize that this is a person who has the right to speak on these things. And just because he says something that they disagree with, they decide he's not part of the scientific community, not part of the consensus that is absolute because they choose who's in it. It's ridiculous.
This is something that we, and when I say we, it's hundreds and thousands of people, are standing up to say, please, all of you, sit down and think about this, read up on this, and then make up your own mind. Don't believe things that people are telling you. Think for yourself and come to your own conclusions. That is why we wrote this book, because all the arguments saying, telling you why what you are doing is absolutely nonsense.
And doctor, on the issue of the vaccine, tonight, Anthony Fauci on this network actually said that 75% of Americans are going to have to get vaccinated to reach what they call herd immunity. Do you buy that?
What utter nonsense. Someone who says this has not the slightest inkling of the basics of immunology. And this is very, very surprising for someone of Dr. Fauci's standing. And I would dare to defy him anywhere in the world at any time.
Well, so you believe that the COVID vaccine is not necessary?
I think it's downright dangerous. And I warn you, if you go along these lines, you are going to go to your doom. And it's so, so unnecessary.
Well, there's another expert for you who is not on the fence, but absolutely hands down, this is dangerous. You shouldn't do it. And of course, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. He must be watching our show, right? But the point is, this is somebody who has a right to speak on these things, who is unequivocally stating that not only is he wrong, but they are just straight up lying to you. I mean, the idea that he's saying that this means it shows he has no understanding of immunology, I argue that's not true. I argue that just intentionally deceiving you and knowing that only people like Dr. Secrete here will know that he's lying because they're intelligent enough to understand it. It was Sukrit Bhakti. You know, they know that only these kind of people will stand up and actually speak their mind, and then they'll get attacked by the, you know, the people towing the line in the scientific community. It's incredible. But you know, that's not the first time this has happened, and it just doesn't have the effect that that it should, because people in the mainstream and people that are towing the line, they continue to control the conversation, at least in the mainstream. And this has been something that's been going on for a long time. That clip in and of itself, I hope you will look more into it and share and talk about what he's saying, because this is becoming too hard to ignore, guys. But here's another example, and this goes further back. Right. This is not this clip in general is before what we're talking about. But take a listen to what he has to say. Now, this is talking about not just COVID-19 vaccines, but just vaccines in general. This is an expert in a congressional hearing stating things that might alarm you. Now, I want to reiterate the fact that understand that even aluminum nanoparticles simply mean aluminum at the nano size. But that does not mean inherently that a nanoparticle is not nanotechnology. Just important to understand that difference, because nanotechnology, I believe, is playing a huge role in what's happening today. But remember, this is about vaccines in general. Take a listen to this.
I heard earlier that there's no real concern about aluminum because it's such a small amount, and so it really shouldn't matter. But the kind of aluminum that we put into vaccines is a different kind of aluminum that we see environmentally. This is called a nanoparticle, and nanoparticles bind really tightly to the bacteria antigens, the virus antigens, the food protein antigens, and any other contaminants that are in the vaccines that we may not know about. And we know that the biochemical properties of nanoparticles is that they are capable of entering the brain.
That is wildly relevant right now. We're just talking about the blood-brain barrier and the testing and all the different different technologies that were created by the same type of people in the same circles right before, you know, years before all of this, that had to do specifically with putting nanotech at your blood-brain barrier and having that into your brain. This is stuff that's being researched, but they just act. I mean, what Bill Gates' wife acts like, there's nothing like that out there. You're so stupid. As there's like 11 patents for exactly that. It's ridiculous. But the idea that this can enter your brain is something that we're not allowed to talk about. But this is a fact.
That are in the vaccines that we may not know about. And we know that the biochemical properties of nanoparticles is that they are capable of entering the brain. And so we have not evaluated the safety of the aluminum nanoparticle and its injection and where it goes when it gets into the body and whether it gets into the brain. Do vaccine ingredients belong in the brain? No. Do they get into the brain? No one has ever studied it. But animal studies using the same chemicals that are in vaccines that we give to children directly demonstrate that the vaccine ingredients do enter the brain.
Now, I want to make something clear here. This is something that somebody else posed, and it's a good point because this is what they will say. It's the same kind of equivocation they do with Kerry Mullis saying, you know, or claiming he didn't say that about the test. That's fake news in regard to the PCR test, because they argue way at the bottom of that ridiculous argument that he was talking about HIV, not COVID-19. But nobody's making that argument. All we're saying is that he said on the record that the PCR test is not designed for what it's being used for today in regard to virus detection. That's it. Virus, not just COVID-19, all of it. Same thing here.
Do they get into the brain? No one has ever studied it. But animal studies using the same chemicals that are in vaccines that we give to children directly demonstrate that the vaccine ingredients do enter the brain.
So the point is that if animal studies are used in any other sense in regard to testing things before we go to human trials, what does that obviously show you? That there's relevance there, because you wouldn't do it if it didn't somehow make, if it wasn't somehow, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? If it just wasn't somehow relevant to the study, the how it would react in a human body. And the point is that the same reason we do that in regard to other things, vaccines or makeup or whatever, is because it is. And if this is making its way into the brain of an animal, then it's very likely that it's going to do the same to you. And I would argue that it will. I mean, this is the kind of thing that you're doing to err on the side of accuracy, to say that it will highly likely. And that's the truth. But my opinion, it's absolute. If it's happening in animals' brains, it's the same thing that's going to happen to you. There are differences, yes, obviously, between animals and humans, but the point about the process is the same. And what he's saying there is that he says, we know, and then references the animal studies. But of course, people argue it's not human brains, so that's fake news, and that's what they will do. It's frustrating, because that's a fallacy, and they know that.
We are ignoring this information. There are scientists in Europe who've actually done studies on the aluminum nanoparticle and have shown that it can persist in the brain for years and decades. And so what we're seeing,
meaning that it continues to build up, and then add that in with the aluminum barium that's being pumped into our skies to supposedly stop climate change. But, you know, that's been doing that for decades before this, because they've been doing it for long before they ever said it was for climate change. Or the any number of other things that's in your food, or the glyphosate and everything everywhere, or the fluoride. I mean, all these things combine in very dangerous ways. But he's saying that this builds up in your brain. And this is something that Patrick Roddy from StopSprayingUs.com, if you've been a follower of this show for a long time, or rather just this channel, but this is before I ever did the Daily Wrap-Up, I used to talk to a person called Patrick Roddy from StopSprayingUs.com. Now, I've lost touch with this person in an alarming way. If I understand it, I'll ask text, I think something happened to this guy. His site's gone and just kind of disappeared. The point was, he was monitoring rainfall in San Francisco for years and proving highly dangerous levels of aluminum and barium in the water. And that builds up. And the point he kept making is that in the UK, what's one of the leading causes of death is Alzheimer's. That's crazy. And he was coming out with this massive study to compare these things with different areas, and he just suddenly just vanished. I can't get a hold of the guy. That was a long time ago. So the idea that it continues to build up in your brain is staggeringly relevant.
The aluminum nanoparticle, and have shown that it can persist in the brain for years and decades. And so what we're seeing is a large outbreak of neurodevelopmental disabilities in adults, including Alzheimer's. And one of the main factors that they're finding in the brains of people with Alzheimer's is the aluminum nanoparticle that's directly related to the vaccines that we're giving.
Yep.
So we have never studied whether the aluminum that we're giving in vaccines gets into the brain, and we've never measured whether it stays in the brain and what it does if it does stay in the brain.
Just so you can see the date there, it's February 19, 2020.
But we do know that vaccines are supposed to cause inflammation in the body. But we have more than half of our children with chronic inflamed conditions.
So vaccines are supposed to cause inflammation in the body, and we have half of our children with chronic inflamed conditions. But sure, let's pretend like that doesn't mean anything. Like, it's so painfully obvious how much of a political effort there is to stifle and hide the obvious, and I mean painfully obvious, correlation between what's happening with children and adults and the rise in vaccine doses and the vaccine schedule.
And we've never allowed ourselves to ask the question, if the vaccines cause inflammation acutely, do they continue to create inflammation chronically? We have 1 in 5 with neurodevelopmental disabilities, 1 in 10 with ADD and ADHD, 1 in 35 with autism, 1 in 11 with asthma, and 1 in 20 under the age of 5 with seizures.
God, it makes me sick. Seizures, these are all of these things. Now, here's something I wanted to show you before I play the next clip. Just a quick, I only chose 3 of them. And there are an endless list of these things that are happening with adults and children, but children specifically in this case. Asthma, autism, and I did Alzheimer's as well in regard to adults. Now check this out. Remember, first of all, what we're talking about here in regard to The Act of 1986, right? This is the act that began the gold rush of vaccines. The act that gave indemnity to these vaccine creators, removed it gave them immunity from liability. I always mix those up for some reason lately anyway. Point being that they're no longer accountable when people get hurt by the things they're making. And they argue that's because that they were not going to make them fast enough if they had to make them safe. I mean, that's literally what this boils down to. And they say, well, because people are suing us, we're not going to do this anymore. And they argue, well, we need them so badly that we have to remove that because people are suing frivolously. Yeah, so I'm sorry, your son went deaf and you're a frivolous lawsuit. Oh, your daughter died? Nah, frivolous lawsuit, right? There's $4 billion paid out in vaccine court, but sure, it was frivolous lawsuits. 1986 is when this began, a great video from Andrew Wakefield that's showing you that this was kind of like when this tide began to turn. Now, here's the point. Asthma, 1980, 1987. Okay, it says the annual asthma death rate. Now, by the way, these are just correlations. Take the information for what you will. The annual asthma death rate was consistently higher for blacks than whites, which again, I find interesting in the larger eugenics discussion. All of these things historically have been higher for blacks and higher for minorities. It's very odd. It says for blacks, the rate increased 44%. That's crazy. But here's the point. The greatest increase in asthma occurred in persons less than 20 years of age. Where was it? Oh, I'd lose my spot here. Oh, it's right here. I don't know why I lost the highlight on that. It says from 1980 to 1987, the death rate from asthma and the underlying cause of death increased 31%. 31%. The average, where was the other one? Asthma is, the point nonetheless is that after 1986 and generally into the 90s, we saw a dramatic exponential increase in asthma that started right around this time frame. I thought I had another one that was highlighted here. Anyways, I'll read this one next. Anyway, based on the NHIS results from 1980 through 1987, the prevalence of asthma, that was right here, increased an estimated 30%. 30%, which by the way, you're looking at the data, it leans heavily on the side of 1986-87. 30% increase. It says the greatest increase occurred in persons less than 20 years of age, 42%, reflecting a 69% increase among females. So this is so crazy. Only people, specifically under 20 and only female, specifically just randomly increased almost 70% in 7 years. Does that sound like some natural thing of just kind of organic development of this? How does that even possibly make sense? Only, the 70% females under 20. Something weird happened is the point, guys, and the data shows us this. Now, here's another point. ADHD. It says ADHD cases began to climb significantly in the 1990s. There may be a few factors behind this, one of them being more children were actually developing ADHD, and they give other things that, doctors detecting it better and so on. It says, where are we today? Scientists are trying to identify the causes of ADHD as well as possible treatments, right? We're still there. Research points to a very strong genetic link. Children who have parents or siblings with the disorder are more likely to have it. So we're supposed to believe that this genetic link is passing it on, and just all of a sudden it just kind of kicked into gear pretty much specifically here in the process of 7 years. Or, of the process of the 90s. That doesn't make sense. Here is ADHD following that. And it says, of course, they didn't even look at it in regard to studying the data until 1997. And since 1997, we've seen a dramatic increase exponentially of ADHD. As we all know, we all see this. The point being here is just to show you that it specifically began to significantly increase in the 1990s. And then they finally started covering it and it just continued to go up. Here's another one. This is the document we're looking at, vital and health statistics, mortality trends for Alzheimer's disease. Okay? It says right here, in 1991, a record 14,112 Alzheimer's deaths were reported in the United States. A record. In 1991, a total of 14,012 were reported in the United States, an increase of 13,255, about 16-fold from the 1857 reported, from the 857 reported in 1979. Right. So in that exact time frame, we saw a 16-fold increase in Alzheimer's. Anybody? Between 1979 and 1991, the age-adjusted death rate for Alzheimer's disease increased 12-fold, from 2.5 to 29.3 per 100,000 population 65 years or older. Incredible. Now, again, there could be another reason for it. But I find it hard to believe when you go from all of them that you find the same interesting spike in the same time frame. Here's autism. Sorry for the green line through that. I'm not sure why the highlighter is doing that on this page. It looks like an old version of a website, but it says, in 2018, Centers for Disease Control's Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring reported that approximately, and I actually believe, I think he stated 1 in 35, the doctor I just played for you, but we'll go with this one for the sake of argument. It says 1 in 59 children. I believe it's much higher than that. This is 2018. In a 1 in 59 children in the United States has been identified with an autism spectrum disorder. This estimate is a 14% increase from the 1 in 68 rate of 2016 and a 47% increase from the 1 in 88 rate of 2012. In the 1980s, this is crazy. So understand that if you went from 1 in 68 to from 1 in 88 to 1 in 68, and that's a 47% increase, right? In 1980, autism prevalence was reported in as 4 in 10,000. So 4 in 10,000 in 1980, right? In the 90s, so right past that frame of 1986 and the dramatic increase in vaccines and all this stuff and the lack of safety, in the 90s, the prevalence jumped to 1 in 2,500. And later, 1 in 1,000 in the 90s. Do you have somebody out there who's good at math? Feel free and jump in. Right, if 1 in 88 to 1 in 68 is 47, if we're going from 4 in 10,000 to 1 in 25 in a decade, this is a pretty good example of something happening that caused that increase. Yeah, it could be many things, I'm sure. But when you see all of these diseases that are all associated with exactly what this doctor is telling you, is associated with vaccines and specifically the nanoparticles within them, and all of them spiked at the exact, you know, same time frame of when these things were being removed, the safety measures, well, gee, I think we have to ask certain questions. Food for thought. But, you know, make sure you take your medicine. I couldn't believe this. Daily News. Take your medicine. Vaccines aren't medicine. And secondly, genetically altering vaccines are not medicine at all, even by the very definition. What these are designed to do are alter your genetic, they're altering the way your body responds to this vaccine. So when the vaccine comes along, it acts differently and that protects you, right? So the point is that the normal vaccines actually do something to create a reaction to fight that. This is changing your body in hopes that it then fights that, which they don't know what that will cause going forward. And of course, they didn't test it very well for your safety. Incredible. But take your medicine, though. This is daddy, mommy, daddy government telling you what you need to do. Take your medicine. It's crazy. Even just the tone with that, like the impression they're giving. You need to do what you're told. Well, the good news is that, as Del Bigtree reported, more than half of the Fire Department of New York City say they will refuse COVID-19 vaccines. And as Dell was reporting, that it seems like possibly hospitals and other groups are going to follow suit, which is huge. As I always say, that the enforcement, I guess, fire department, not necessarily enforcement arm, but, you know, our argument going that enforcement arm begins to turn, well, that's when the tide begins to turn, when police or people are enforcing their laws begin to change sides. But the idea of seeing this is a big deal. They are standing up for your rights. But don't forget, though, according to the World Health Organization envoy, your life won't return to normal for at least 2 years. Right? Oops, that cat's out of the bag. But simultaneously, you will still continue to see mainstream media tell you that the vaccine will give you your life back. But that's simply not true, and they're all telling you that. But Dr. Fauci says that masks and social distance will also still be needed after the vaccine, even though they continue to argue that your life will give return to you. But on the point of masks and social distancing, here's something that I had to do because somebody reached out to me, and this is something that I have kind of taken. It's kind of become a mission for me to prove how obviously deceitful all this is. This is another study that is being pushed on people as proof that masks work, published December 4th. Okay, assessing the effectiveness of using various face coverings to mitigate the transport of airborne particles produced by coughing indoors. First of all, this is another computer model. How insulting it is that they continue to yell if we point to anything other than a randomly controlled trial, but then constantly and only point to things that are the bottom of the barrel of studies. Computer models, observational studies, and then act like that proves everything. But if I point to one of those, oh, you're such a stupid conspiracy theorist. It's a double standard, as it is with everything we do. But the real point here, guys, regardless of the fact that it's computer models and not real world in the middle of a pandemic, because it totally makes sense, is the fact that it's talking about respiratory droplets, which is what they recently switched back to make all this make sense. As we just told you, and as I've played before, as Dr. Lyons Wielder said, as many experts have pointed out, as is a common understanding, this thing spreads predominantly by aerosolized particulates, meaning small, the kind of things that can float, the kind of things that don't just drop with spit. That's what they mean when they say respiratory droplets. And also it means that it's quite a big size in regard to the size of the virus. Now, all of that aside, the real point here is that they're trying to tell you that, first of all, that respiratory droplets are what need to be stopped, and that's simply not the case. But even if it was what need to be stopped, understand that the size of the virus and the size they tested for is not the same, are not the same. Now, again, just understand they're talking about droplets in regard to the pandemic. Now, here's where it says. A healthy volunteer sat on a chair facing the sampling instrument, just to see, you could see that it's a computer model, and followed a prescribed coughing protocol. Each sampling session lasted for 4.5 minutes. It's like you're in a lab and you're coughing into a machine. Hardly something that can be used for real world. Hardly a random controlled trial. Now it says, we measured real time. The PNC was, hold on, it was particle number concentration. It says that they measured the particle, the PNC with a size ranging from 0.01 to greater than one micron. Which is what that is, or micrometer, during each sampling session. Now it says an aerosolized particle sizer was used to measure particle size distribution within the range of 0.5 to 19.8 microns. Okay? That is bigger than the virus. Now, I think that was all I had. I'm going to show you, I'll read this first. Here's the conclusions. Face shields by itself provided the least protection. In contrast, cloth masks reduced cough particles, but they're talking about big droplets, 77%, and the combination of face shield and cloth mask improved the particle reduction to 89%, ignoring for a minute how the cloth mask increased your risk of infection. Although cloth masks did not perform as well as N95s, they could still serve a simple barrier to help reduce the spread of respiratory droplets, except that's completely false. Now, let's take a peek at this. Now, remember, let's just start with this. Here is the N95 mask. Actually, here, let's go. I think that's why I did this one first. Yeah, okay, yeah, let's do this one first. So the point is to show you that the size that they tested for, 0.5 microns to 19.8 microns, is too big. Now, what they're saying is, no, N95 filters are not too large to stop COVID-19 particles. It's wrong. Now, it says COVID-19 virus particle size is 125 nanometers or 0.125 microns. And they say the range is 0.06 to 0.14 microns, which I think is actually smaller than I've heard other experts claim it is. But let's just take the word of these mainstream outlets because, you know, that's where we're supposed to get our information from, right? Well, if they're testing for 0.5 to 19.8 microns, and we know that the virus at most is 0.14, doesn't that mean that it's too small? It does. But let's keep going. Because they make the argument, they say, I think they actually highlighted it. The COVID-19 particle is indeed around 0.1 micron in size, but it is always bonded. That's the point. They're arguing, okay, it's bonded to something larger, which is true. So how much larger? If it is a 0.1 micron size, and you're going to have maybe just a thin layer of spit or something around it that, not droplet size, but enough to be around something, does that mean it goes all the way to 0.5 microns? Probably not. No, it doesn't. But on top of that, this argument is a fallacy, as we've seen numerous other experts point out, that if it is around something larger, like a droplet, that's almost always dead virus in the first place, or numerous other things we've talked to experts about. So this is just an argument to make it seem like, yes, it is that small, but larger stuff too. There's not really an argument there. There's no definition. It just kind of goes forward with that after making that as if that countered the point. But it says, the N95 filter indeed is physically around the 0.3 micron size, but that doesn't mean it can only stop particles larger than that. That's incorrect. The masks are actually best for particles either larger or smaller than 0.3 micron threshold. Now they're saying this because they desperately want you to understand, to think that the mask that they've been pushing. Now I think this was in the middle. This is June. Remember, June 12th, the mask that they were saying in the beginning, N95 is the best you can have, despite the fact that they forgot the fact that the filter only goes one way. So when you breathe out, you're breathing out everything freely. Even though they pretended it was to protect your grandma, I guess they just missed that in their propaganda school they went to before they pushed all this nonsense out. But here is Honeywell talking about their N95 mask, you know, the company that makes them. And then, of course, in this regard, this is the equivalent of the box of masks saying that doesn't protect you, because they're going to argue that this is being taken out of context. Here's what it says. Removes 95% of 0.3 plus micron particles. More clear, 0.3 microns. The mask filters out contaminants like dust, mist, and fumes. Of course, they don't say viruses there. They must have just forgot that. The minimum size of 0.3 microns of particulates and large droplets won't pass through the barrier, according to the CDC. So according to the CDC, it's 0.3 or higher. So explain for me why the Daily Mail, USA Today, is just straight up misreporting that. Did they not do their due diligence? Did they lie because they wanted to lie for their truth? Doesn't matter, really. They're straight up telling you that it will, and the site that makes those is saying that's not true according to the CDC. That's ridiculous. But then going forward, here's another one from the Mayo Clinic. Experts answer questions about masks. It says, the question, what is the difference between cloth masks and medical masks? Such as an N95 mask. The idea behind the N95 mask is it has a filtering ability down to and actually below the size of SARS-CoV-2. That's not true. I just showed you from the site that the company that makes them sure knows the information. The virus that causes COVID-19. So the coronavirus is about 0.12 microns in diameter. N95 masks protect down to 0.1, he says. Nope. Not true. With 95% efficacy, which means that's where it gets its name. That's true. 95. But not the size. So this is another expert who's wrong, who simply missed either lying to you or misinformed. And it says, what are the potential dangers in terms of using the mask? Once a mask gets wet, maybe from our exhalation, it really begins to get worse and the effectiveness goes down in filtering any sort of respiratory particulate matter. So you mean when it gets wet, as in like moments after you're breathing in and out of it? Yes. But you see, they don't act like that makes it, that matters. So the people having a pocket full of masks they're walking around with, and doesn't that then make them dirty? Or is it a box in their car? Or is it a cloth mask? Because if it's a cloth mask, you don't have a box. You just have your cloth or your shirt or your tissue, whatever it is. And you're going to carry them around. You're going to wash it every 10 seconds. And CDC is recommending them. It says, so that's one thing. It would need to be changed. Yes, we know that, but people are at work all day and they can't do so. The second thing is you do yourself no favor if you wear a mask and then you touch the mask, which every single person does, either to adjust it or take it off in the wrong way. As medical professionals, we're taught how to put a mask on and how to take a mask off, but this would be unfamiliar to the public. Yeah, but sure, let's roll it out a massive mask mandate and arrest people who do it wrong without them knowing how to do it. You take it off through however you're holding it in your head. You take it off, though, through however you're holding it on your head. You do not touch the front of the mask. And then the mask needs to be washed before it would be used again. So this is the guy telling you that if you touch it, it's dead. You need to wash it. But every single day, everywhere you go, you will watch people fiddling with their mask constantly. So who cares, right? But the CDC points to the more information about the cloth mask, he says, which, of course, I need to point out that according to the NIH, the National Library of Medicine, that's not true. The rates of all infection outcomes were highest in the cloth mask arm. This is from 2015. That's weird. I thought it was 2004. 2015 makes it even more relevant. Cloth masks also had significantly higher rates of influenza-like illness compared with the control arm. And an analysis by MaskU showed that influenza-like illness and laboratory-confirmed virus were significantly higher in the cloth mask arm compared with the medical mask group. Penetration of cloth masks by droplets, 97%. Even medical masks, 44%. How does that make sense if 50% of the time even medical masks allow the largest droplets to get through? The study is the first random controlled trial of cloth masks, and the results caution against the use of the mask that the CDC is telling everybody to use. Moisture retention, reuse of cloth masks, and poor filtration may result in increased risk of infection. It says cloth masks should not be recommended for healthcare workers, particularly in high-risk situations. The guidelines need to be updated. They never were. But sure, let's just trust them and go forward. Despite the fact that they're not even they can't even do their research, apparently, that they don't even understand what they're talking about. And the fact that going back to the main point, if this is 0.1 And they're testing this mask study to find out whether or not 0.5 or higher stops by these masks. Well, obviously they will, because that's not what we're talking about. On top of that, it's aerosolized particulates and not droplets that we're dealing with. This study is ridiculous. As it finishes, I've already read that. It works on these things this much percentage based on two factors that are not even accurate: the size of this and what needs to be stopped. But sure, I'm sure this is being parroted like everybody else. Now, here's another example that I'm going to rush through at the end here. Admiral is saying he slams bans on outdoor dining as without scientific basis. It's just incredible that we can see this level. I mean, they're telling you. Look, remember when we talked about the, fringe conspiracy, the weirdo doctors that don't know what they're talking about, and anti-science and all that. Can we just put that behind us now? Because we have all kinds of experts, Nobel laureates, entire countries, like actual people in the coronavirus task force are telling you that this is not the case. Or the fact that there's not scientific basis for these lockdowns, but they're going anyway. How does that even make sense? I mean, really ask yourself, if the coronavirus task force is telling you that that's not the case, and yet it's happening anyway, this is independent of anything other than control. This should scare you, because it scares me. Here's Fox News. The White House coronavirus task force orders task force members Fauci and Grior at odds over the lockdowns. It says right here, members of the White House task force clashed Monday over new lockdown orders in California, with Dr. Fauci saying that they didn't have any choice. Which is incredible, Mr. Authoritarian monger, warmonger. I mean, this is to tell you that you have no choice, or that they don't have any choice. This is not what representative government looks like, guys. This is totalitarian, authoritarian control using fear as a cover. But then Admiral went on to argue that evidence and science do not support them at all, showing you that there is discussion to be had here. And it's not all-encompassing, despite the fact that we get deleted for talking about it. But as Dick Breeze points out, now 8 countries with no full lockdowns versus UK with 2 lockdowns. But let's take a look at that. That doesn't seem to make sense. If the UK's had 2 and these other countries have none, why is the UK dramatically higher than them? Well, I guess we'll just ignore that. Of course, their argument will be, that's why we need them, because it's getting so bad. But that's fear circumventing logic. If they worked with some of the strictest measures happening there, well, then you'd see something instead of a dramatic increase, as well as all the tests and all that. This is about deaths, first of all, but remember, we just showed you how they're gauging those deaths. So it's a guarantee. And of course, this is your future if you just happily go along to get along. Couples able to share a kiss for the first time in months thanks to their passport scheme, except the article is on to point out that they didn't kiss at all. They were actually, I guess, pressing their masks together, even though they just pointed out in that other study that those kind of masks don't really do anything at all. But yeah, sure, wear those. That's acceptable, right? You're allowed to wear that kind of mask, even though that study just said, the study that they're pointing to that says they work, showed you that those face masks are basically irrelevant. Those kind you're staring at. Regardless of that, it's an illusion. They want you to think you can kiss again if you take your test and get the passport. Nope. You have to wear your mask and social distance for years, as Fauci just said. But we'll pretend you're kissing through your face shields. Remember this one? This is your future, guys. Emotional moment where grandma and grandpa hug their kids using a hugging station. I don't even want to play the sound again. It just breaks my heart. Where she's like, I want to hug you more. I want to come through. It's so sad. It's horrifying. God, it just makes me sick. But there's some hope here, because we are seeing people resist. We are seeing revolution take place, guys. Virginia County rebels against Governor Northam's lockdown restrictions, declares itself a First Amendment sanctuary. That's what we need more of, is people in entire locations to stand up and fight for what's happening here. Fight against what's happening and fight for our liberty. Here's Rebecca Jones, which I'm going to follow up more as I go forward here, because I was only just recently brought attention. Especially with what happened with that previous one. I'm actually forgetting her name. I think it was Millie. There's a lot of sketchy stuff that happened with that I'm of the mind that there was something really deceptive going on there. Now, this, I believe, is not. But I'm going to do more research to find out more. Let's just watch the quick video here so you can see what happens. You can just see the cops just basically come into her house and... Listen for yourself.
Come outside. Who else is in the house, man?
My 2 children and my husband.
Where's your husband?
Calm down.
Mr. Jones, come down the stairs. Now!
Notice he did not identify himself. The second one does. But imagine if he came running down with a gun because he didn't know who that was and got shot. That would be the cop's fault, and they never get charged for that. I mean, they do sometimes, but by and large, they get special treatment.
Police, come down now!
Search warrant! Bring down the stairs!
My children!
Oh,
hang on,
let me clear
my
mind.
He just pointed a gun at my children!
A nonviolent act, you know, warrant for nonviolent stuff. They come in with SWAT team and they're pointing guns at her children. There's half the chat here, half the comments below this are sycophants, bootlicker types that are saying, well, don't break crimes then. What they did was totally justifiable. Like, just ridiculous. Say that when they're pointing armed weapons at your children when you didn't commit any crime and no, and they didn't announce what they were doing. And I mean, on and on and on. It's ridiculous.
Search warrant.
Right. And finally, though, now we're going to announce what's happening, right? I mean, it's incredible. But, as she says, at 8:30 this morning, state police came into my house and took all of my hardware and tech. They were serving a warrant on my computer after DOH filed a complaint. Department of Health. They pointed a gun at my face. They pointed guns at my kids. It says they took my phone number, my computer, and every day to post these case numbers in Florida and school cases for an entire country. They took evidence of corruption at the state level. They claimed it was about a security breach. This is DeSantis, the governor. It says he sent his Gestapo. This is what happens to scientists who do their job honestly. Oh, by the way, I should have mentioned that she's a scientist studying, what was the point here? Tracking COVID-19. Basically, as I understand it, she's been like pushed out because of what she's been pointing out. I'm going to do more. I'm going to research more into this before tomorrow. But it says, this is what happens when people who speak truth to power. Now, the point reason I'm showing you this is because of this. This is what made me feel like this is much more, there's more credence here. Okay. This is an attorney who is tweeting. I'll read you what it says. He says he resigned his position today with the 12th Circuit over what happened to her. Okay. It says, I hereby resign my position as commissioner and vice chair for the 12th Circuit Judicial Nominating Commission. It has been my honor to serve on the commission for over 10 years. In that time, we have reshaped the judiciary and the circuit with highly qualified, intelligent jurists of the highest integrity, and I'm very proud to have been part of that. I have been increasingly alarmed by the governor's response to COVID-19 pandemic. I believe the policy of this state towards COVID is reckless and irresponsible. I remained in my position because health policy was unrelated to my job. However, the recent events regarding public access to truthful data on the pandemic and the specific treatment of Rebecca Jones has made the issue now a legal one rather than just medical. I have followed the events of Mr. Jones and seen the quality of her replacement and reviewed the search warrant that led to her home being raided yesterday by multiple armed officers. Based on what I have seen and read, I find these actions unconscionable. Even if the facts alleged are true, I would still call her a hero. I also find Mr. Piccolo's statements that the governor was unaware of the raid not credible. Please take action to fill my vacancy in his position. I no longer wish to serve the current government of Florida in any capacity. Good for you. Here is the mission on Rebecca's website, Florida COVID Action. Truth never damages a cause that is just, Mahatma Gandhi. So you can check this out for yourself so you can understand what they're doing. It's basically saying that it's an LLC. It's registered in Florida Social Benefits Corporation, made of scientists specializing in public health research, data science, and data visualization, founded by Florida scientist and whistleblower Rebecca Jones. Good for her. But here's the point. This is what somebody's commenting in that discussion. She revealed that they are artificially deflating the positivity rates by making them report daily negatives for repeated tests, but only counting positives once. So the point is revealing information that shows how they're gaming the numbers. And arguably, this is what happens. So this is an interesting discussion. And the fact that I'm seeing this makes it seem much more relevant to me, that there's something really happening here, that somebody's willing to resign their position in the government because of how upset they are with all of this. It's crazy. Now to finish off, unless this freezes up on me, and I'm going to follow up on this as I will with the other thing as well. This is unbelievable to me. As Derek pointed out, Galactic Federation was trending. He said Project Bluebeam, and I think you're right to suggest that. It says former space security chief of Israel. This is real. I have the other tweet up. says aliens exist and that a Galactic Federation has been in contact with Israel and the U.S. for years, but are avoiding revealing themselves to the public because humanity's not ready, he says. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe that this is happening now. I don't know why my screen wants to continue to freeze. Come on, I'm in a hurry screen. Let's go. I have a very important dinner to get to. And the screen wants to freeze on me. This is the last thing I'm doing. Come on. There we go. Now, Jerusalem Post. Former Israeli space security chief says this, that they've been in contact with aliens within a galactic federation. Not a joke. Here's what I said. Yeah, so if you thought 2020 was crazy, add the Israeli government claiming to represent humanity before a galactic federation. I said, gee, I wonder why they think humanity's not ready with that government representing us. Facetiousness aside, I don't buy this for a second. And just to follow up, so to clarify, I think it's probably way down here. Somebody basically, I want to make clear, I'm not arguing. Oh, okay, here it is. He says, aside from these nation's agendas, it's mathematically impossible, given how vast the universe it is, that there's not other life out in the world, and so on. And I said, I couldn't agree more. Been saying that since I was a kid. And this is assuming, that for everyone out there thinking this right now, that what we know about space is correct and accurate, which is possible that's not true. But yeah, I completely agree. And I do. I've thought that for a long time. The idea that it's not something out there, if what we believe is true, is it's just crazy. But I was saying I don't buy the part where Israel is humanity's front man. BS. I do not buy it for a second. If we think that these other beings that are much more advanced would come down and associate with the warmongering sociopaths of these governments, it's obscene. But who knows? Who knows, right? But my point is that I don't buy it for a second. I think they're making this up because we're leading to something big, whether it's because the pandemic lie is falling on its face and everything else is, maybe this is it. This is an endgame scenario, but I'll tell you right now, guys, this is said for a reason right now, especially as we go towards December 21st, which is some like alignment of the planets that hasn't happened since the birth of Christ. But let's pretend like that's not driving all of this towards some massive event, which is crazy. But the point, guys, of all of this is for you to understand that you are being deceived for something, some master end game plan that they clearly have been driving in for decades. And that's all very clear to see. All these agendas have been pushed in forever. My hope is that you will take the time to ask the questions, research the information, and share what you think is accurate. Think for yourself. There's never been a more important time. In fact, there's never been a more important time to stand up and march through the damn street. I'm fed up with what's happening right now, and it's about time for people to take some action. And I don't mean violence. I mean, it's time for you to just simply do not allow this to take place. Civil disobedience is where my mind is at, but you know, sometimes things call for more. Time. Time is now. I love you all, as always. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant. I was going to pick something right there and then I changed my mind. So I have to wait a second just so I can play it again. I love you all. Stay safe out there.
What if the experts are wrong? What if quarantining the healthy doesn't actually save lives? What if wearing a mask in public is not effective?
If you do not have a mask, you cannot ride public transportation, sir.
My name is Dr. Jeff Barkey, and I'm here representing thousands of physicians across the country whose voices are being silenced because we don't agree with the mainstream media and the experts who are telling us what to do.
Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease, and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
Never in the history of this great republic have we quarantined the healthy. Never in the history of this great republic have we told churchgoers that it's illegal for you to exercise your First Amendment right of freedom of religion. Never in the history of this country
have we been told that you can't go to church because it's non-essential, but you can go get an abortion because that's essential? Never before in our country have we let criminals out of jail, but we've told you you can't exercise your Second Amendment right and protect yourself by purchasing a firearm. When liquor stores are deemed essential, but your businesses are deemed non-essential, there's something wrong going on.
We cut off people's utilities this week and made them pay what could have been their last check to us to turn their lights on in a global health pandemic. But you don't care about that. You didn't want to meet.
This booklet, the Declaration of Independence and our U.S. Constitution, was never designed to restrain the people. It was designed to restrain the government. We're realizing that the fatality rate of this virus is in the ballpark of a bad seasonal influenza. Do not let your voices be silenced. We will see eventually that this government-imposed cure is going to be worse than the virus itself.
Stop, man. This shit ain't right, bro.
But what's happening now as unemployment reaches 20 to 30 million people is those folks are now becoming dependent on the government. And what government dependency causes is a larger, more tyrannical government.
Look, he ain't even do nothing.
We the people want to put our government back in its place. We want a small representative government, not a large tyrannical government. I'm here representing thousands of physicians around the country whose voices must be heard.
We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy, where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home.
So you guys are asking me to leave the store for not wearing a mask when I have a medical condition, even though yours was pulled under
all
your
you
nose.
Need is a note that says
I don't
can't
have
wear
to bring
mask.
A note, and yours isn't even on.
You just do whatever you want to do.
It's America, right?
Listen, get out.
I cannot wear a mask.
Get out.
Do not let your voices be silenced.